The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening, and we wish each and every one of you a happy Valentine's Day. Today we are tackling hormone replacement therapy in menopause with guest expert Dr. Carol Cox of USF Health. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through the immediate impact of health education. And once again, as I do now every week, and up until our big fifth annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, I want to remind each and every one of you of this wonderful opportunity to obtain to obtain a breakthrough for your medical issues at our fifth annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, Saturday, March 27th, several weeks away. It is free admission at the Tampa Convention Center. Our keynote speaker is Dr. Judy Genshaf, USF President. Our MC is an honorary chair, is Stacey Scheibel, we all know from News Channel 8, news anchor. And we have 22 seminars, and each given by an expert. We have cardiac disease, colon cancer, cervical ovarian and uterine cancer, nutrition and cancer prevention, obesity in women, screening for breast cancer, migraines and headaches, fertility and family, menopause, bladder incontinence, osteoporosis, sleep disorders, breast cancer, reversing dry eye, looking more youthful without general anesthesia, heart care and disease prevention for women, skin cancer, diabetes, raising your child without going crazy, allergies and asthma, gynecological cancer, what you need to know. 21 core medical topics given by physicians, physician experts who know how to speak plain English. In addition, our 22nd seminar is financial wellness. So it's a great opportunity to, again, engage experts and have a synergy of ideas in that seminar room with other women dealing with the same or similar issues as you. In addition, we have 8 different types of fitness classes, including certified trainers in yoga, Pilates, kickboxing, Tai Chi, stretching, Zumba fitness, circuit training, and resistance training. Plus, We have healthcare screenings and wellness chair massages, all on one day, just a few short weeks away. So we invite each and every one of you to go to our website, focusonfemales.com, and on that homepage, on the upper right corner, is a registration tab. If you go there, you can register, and we encourage you to register to ensure you have a seat in the seminars that you want to attend and participate in. Okay, and at this point, I want to begin today's Radio Healthcare Clinic with Dr. Carol Cox, who is an assistant professor of general OBGYN, obstetrics and gynecology at the University of South Florida. She is board certified as an OBGYN and a fellow of the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. Carol received her medical degree from the University of Maryland, and after graduation, completed her internship in internal medicine at the University of Maryland. She, and at the same time, I guess your fiance, Carol, was training there as well, correct?
Yes, he completed medical school 1 year after me.
Okay. And then they were married and moved to Tampa, where they started residencies in obstetrics and gynecology and general surgery at the University of South Florida. Carol's been with USF ever since, now on faculty for almost 8 years in her current title as assistant professor. Meanwhile, her husband, Dr. John Meercox, is a general surgeon in Tampa, and he specializes in breast disease at the Tampa Bay Breast Care Specialists.
That's correct.
They have three children, ages 2 to 7, and at USF, Carol is actively involved with caring for women at all stages of life, including perimenopause and menopause, and especially enjoys educating her patients as well as teaching residents and other students. So our focus today is on menopause symptoms and treatment with hormone replacement therapies, pros and cons. So let's begin at the beginning. What is perimenopause, and how does it differentiate from menopause?
Thanks, Steve, for having me here today. To start with, menopause is something that occurs as women age. Basically, the cycles that you have every month in which ovulation occurs will use up the eggs gradually, and at a certain point, at a certain age for each woman, they will cease to ovulate. And the average age at which this occurs is 51, but it can vary anywhere from the age of 40 all the way up to 60, depending on the individual and when they finally use up all of those eggs.
Okay, so Carol, tell us what happens when the ovaries stop functioning.
So it can happen either abruptly or gradually. And the manner in which it occurs can affect the symptoms that one experiences. When it happens more abruptly, such as in patients who have the ovary surgically removed, they typically have more significant symptoms of hot flashes, mood instability, and there can be a lot of other symptoms, but those are the two main things that that patients find to be troubling in their everyday lives. The best indicator of what's going on with the ovaries is the menstrual cycles. So we typically see the cycles become more irregular, more spaced out.
Okay, I'm going to take a quick break. I'm having a little problem with my headphones here. We'll be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems. Go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with a doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back. My headphones are working. I can hear once again. It's a wonderful thing. And again, Carol, I want to thank you for joining us today, Dr. Carol Cox, on Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. So, perimenopause and menopause, is there a clinical differentiation between the two?
So the definition of menopause is the cessation of the menstrual period for 1 year's duration.
Okay.
And perimenopause, as I said, that occurs in an average age of 51. Perimenopause is the time period during which these irregular periods occur, because in most women, ovulation does not just cease from 1 month to the next, but will become more irregular, in which cycles are skipped, and that can average 2 to 6 years.
Okay. And symptoms, the symptoms that they occur, they tend to begin in the perimenopausal period and increase over time?
Well, they are typically worse in the perimenopausal period because of the ups and downs of the hormones during this time, when the ovaries are functioning at some points and not functioning at others. And most of the symptoms, with the exception of the vaginal symptoms, vaginal dryness, that's the one that tends to get worse over time.
Okay, so if you can make it from a woman's perspective, if you can make it through the perimenopausal years, chances are that you won't have any problems with the hot flashes, night sweats, and mood swings?
Right. They typically will dissipate to a point where they may still be experienced, but not to the degree that they have a significant impact on quality of life.
And that in turn is important with the findings of the Women's Health Initiative, that for some patients, and we'll come back to some more detail, that some patients can benefit from estrogen therapy early on in the perimenopausal period. Is that correct?
Right. That gets to the idea of, in women who do require treatment, trying to limit the amount of time that they require that to the fewest number of years possible. And in that 50 to 60 year old range is typically the time period where that's necessary for most women.
And again, I want to take a step out and remind everybody to call in with your questions now. Our number is 289-1860. That's 289-1860. Outside of Hillsborough County, it's 877-969-8600. 877-969-8600. Now's the time to call in with your questions about menopause, perimenopause, hormone replacement therapy. We encourage you to do so. All right. Now, again, we talked about some of the typical symptoms, the hot flashes, the night sweats. Would you go into more detail about the associated symptoms?
So hot flashes are the one that most people are familiar with, and they occur in about 75% of women, which actually means that 25% of women don't typically experience them, which comes to as a surprise to a lot of women who do, that seems more like the norm. They can occur any time during the day or night, but are most problematic when they're occurring at night. They can occur several times a night and cause wakening and inability to get back to sleep, which then ties into one of the other main symptoms, which is insomnia and sleep difficulties. And then there's also a tie-in with the mood instability A quickness to anger and anxiety are some symptoms that women will complain of, which can be linked to the hot flashes or not. They don't necessarily have to be having hot flashes at the time that they experience those symptoms. And we try to gauge the degree to which this is a problem based on the impact on the quality of life, such as the inability to get sleep, impact on work and family relationships. There's even a survey that can be used in the course of the visit to determine the degree of impact and determine if treatment's necessary.
Now, it'd be great if we can identify why the 25% of women don't have these problems and then share it with the other 75% who do. Is it felt to be a nutritional or diet-related? Certainly many people talking about how some nutritional supplements can help those certain women with the development of these symptoms? Is it known why one quarter of women do not get these problems?
Well, that goes to the question of what causes hot flashes in the first place, and no one's entirely sure. It's clearly linked to brain chemistry in some way, there probably is a relationship with the hypothalamus where some of the stimulation for the estrogen occurs in the first place. But we can see that link also in some of the medications that are also used for hot flashes, which are antidepressants. And there's a relationship to serotonin in the brain. But that doesn't help us to know why some women have it and others don't. There is something to be said for maintaining a healthy weight and exercise, in that those things can help to prevent or alleviate hot flashes to some extent, but not necessarily make them go away completely.
Is there a genetic component to developing symptoms of perimenopause that we know of?
There's not a known genetic component that we can point to. It does tend to be experienced similarly among families. You can tell something about what's going to be the experience based on siblings and mother's experience in terms of the age of onset and how it was experienced. But that's not a guarantee.
And let's see now. Are there other circumstances other than a natural menopause where women can experience these symptoms?
Well, I mentioned earlier the surgical menopause, in which a woman who has had a hysterectomy or without a hysterectomy has had the ovaries removed, and that results in an abrupt change in hormones and typically significant hot flashes. For that reason, a lot of times treatment will be recommended at the time of surgery to try to alleviate those symptoms. And it can also occur prematurely, prior to the age of 40, and we call that premature menopause. It can happen spontaneously at that age, or it could be a result of either chronic illnesses or treatments such as chemotherapy that have caused some damage to the ovaries.
How about polycystic ovary disease? Does that sometimes lead to the development of these symptoms?
There's not been any association between polycystic ovaries and the timing of menopause.
Mm-hmm. All right. And tell us the impact of memory. Is memory loss caused by, is there an association with memory loss and menopause?
There's not a direct association with memory loss and menopause. This is one of those areas in which aging itself, menopause is taking the blame for probably changes that are occurring with aging itself. For that reason, treatments such as hormone replacement therapy aren't recommended for problems with memory. However, if women are experiencing insomnia or depression or mood problems, this can affect their general brain function. And in that way, they may benefit in terms of their memory function by some treatment of their menopausal symptoms.
Okay. And that, of course, goes back to the hot flashes issues.
Exactly.
Well, let's ask a few more questions before we move on to this big study, the Women's Health Initiative, and some of the findings that it raises in regard to hormone replacement therapy. Let's talk about any skin or hair changes associated with menopause.
There are some changes that women notice in their skin and hair, with some dryness, and sometimes losing hair. But again, this may be something that's more related to aging. And you're well aware of the changes that can occur in the eye with problems with dry eye. Those sorts of things are better handled in terms of specifically dealing with that area itself rather than trying to make hormonal adjustments to treat that.
Okay, so that brings us to the specific health risks associated with menopause, things like osteoporosis, cardiovascular disease, cancer, and so forth. Did I leave anything out as far as the main potential health risks with menopause?
One of the things that's worth mentioning, as I was mentioning all these other areas in which changes can occur, is that weight gain itself is not a result of menopause per se. It's not the change in hormones, but again, aging, it's more difficult to maintain one's weight or to lose weight as you age. And so that's an important thing that we should be talking to women about when they come in for visits around this age, is that that's something that they really have to pay attention to and stay on top of in terms of diet and exercise.
And that is from the overall metabolic rate, the basal metabolic rate changes as we get older and...
Yeah, and the distribution of fat changes. There's more tendency to retain fat around the middle. That truncal fat distribution is more common in older age.
Is that, and just as an aside, is there do you have an experience with the amount of antidepressants that people use and where weight is deposited? Have you heard of anything related to that?
I haven't really heard of anything related to dose related. There are associations with weight gain and antidepressants, especially the ones that we use for this, the SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, can cause weight gain primarily through appetite changes and not necessarily problems with metabolically inability to keep the weight off.
And let's see. So let's talk about the Women's Health Initiative. Can you give an overview of that?
So the Women's Health Initiative was a large study that included 161,000 women took place over many years, the first large findings of which came out in 2002. And there were several arms of the Women's Health Initiative, which recruited women the average age of which was 63. And actually, interestingly, they did not have menopausal symptoms. That was one of the exclusion criteria, because the goal was to evaluate the cardiovascular benefits. The paradigm at the time was a belief that estrogen and hormone replacement therapy improved heart health and would reduce cardiac events and heart disease among women who were using it. So they followed several arms, women who were taking estrogen and progesterone, estrogen only, and were following many other endpoints as well to look at heart disease and cancer risk. So those findings that came out in 2002 were important and received much attention, because that study with the estrogen and progesterone arm was discontinued early as a result of an increase in breast cancer incidence in that group, which didn't justify continuing the study at that point.
And I'm just looking at some notes I have here from, I guess this is the from the NIH website about the health initiative. But so they also found, as you mentioned, increased risk of breast cancer, plus actually increased risk of heart attack.
Right. And that was not distinguished between the different arms. If I could just detail, first of all, that I mentioned the different kind of arms, that when we talk about using hormone replacement therapy, the reason why some women would be taking just estrogen is that estrogen is the most effective treatment for hot flashes. But if you have a uterus, you cannot take estrogen alone. And so there's the many preparations that include estrogen and progesterone, because you must protect the uterus from endometrial cancer, which is the result of taking estrogen without progesterone. So yes, in both the estrogen and estrogen progesterone arms, there's an increased risk of stroke and clotting problems. Mm-hmm. And it was in the estrogen and progesterone arm that they also had increased cardiac events.
Okay. We'll be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. Call us now at 289-1860, 289-1860. Everywhere else outside of Hillsborough County, it's 877-969-8600. We'll be right back with more.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
With SRN News, I am Michael Harrington in Washington. A Marine spokesman in Afghanistan says U.S. and Afghan troops are meeting light to moderate resistance as they move into a Taliban stronghold in southern Helmand Province. Captain Abraham Sipe says there are some areas in the town of Miraj where the enemy has chosen to stand and fight. The Americans and Afghan troops are making good headway, though, we're told. Lebanon says its army has fired on four Israeli warplanes. It says the planes were in Lebanese airspace at the time. Such overflights are frequent, and Israel describes them as reconnaissance missions. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says Iran has left the world little choice but to take harsher actions to contain its nuclear program. Speaking at the U.S. Islamic World Forum in Doha, Qatar, Clinton says Tehran has failed to live up to its nuclear obligations. Another layer of snow could be in store for Dixie, several areas of the Deep South to get it, Alabama, Tennessee, Georgia, and even parts of the Carolinas. This is SRN News.
Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. Voters in Massachusetts and New Jersey have sent a message that America's headed in the wrong direction. Unfortunately, President Obama, the Democrats, and the mainstream media aren't listening. Now more than ever, you need intelligent, thoughtful information to stay involved in the fight to turn the country around. Sign up today at townhall.com to get free daily briefings of conservative news, analysis, and opinion from folks like Ann Coulter, Michelle Malkin, and many more. Log on to townhall.com. That's www.townhall.com.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today, we're discussing hormone replacement therapy in menopause with Dr. Carol Cox from the University of South Florida. Carol, why would medical therapy be needed in menopause? Is it strictly for quality of life issues?
At this point, after the findings of the Women's Health Initiative, the indications for using hormone replacement therapy were reviewed, and the recommendations are that we only use it for treatment of those symptoms that I was mentioning, the hot flashes, mood instability, such that is producing a significant effect on quality of life and hasn't been responding to lifestyle modification, because we first recommend changes such as dressing in layers and avoiding triggers of hot flashes. And usually people will have done those things on their own. And if that's not working, then that is the indication for use of hormone replacement therapy. And we also attempt to use it at the lowest dose necessary to treat the symptoms effectively and for the least amount of time necessary. So in order to determine if one still needs it, we eventually try to have them come off of the medication and see if they still have symptoms. Because as we mentioned before, those symptoms will dissipate naturally if they were left alone.
Have you found that avoiding spicy foods and caffeine as well as alcohol can help too on those lifestyle changes?
All of those are among the triggers for hot flashes for most women. And some people have specific triggers, even just cooking and opening up an oven. You know, there's individual things that women can identify and can try to avoid in terms of having the hot flashes.
So really a very important thing is just for the woman to be in touch with their bodies and what they're exposed to, dietary and environmental, because there may be a unique trigger for that individual that others may not have.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Paying attention to that and communicating exactly what's going on to their healthcare provider so that they can try to tailor the treatment for the woman, because there are many options available for therapy for these kind of symptoms.
Mm-hmm. And also it's important, I guess, for the spouse and the family, someone who's around all the time, to help identify things. Sometimes it's hard to identify yourself. It's hard to see yourself sometimes. But those that are around you, your spouse and significant others, can sometimes make associations and help you identify what may be a trigger.
That's frequently the sort of thing that's brought up in the office visit, is that it was the spouse who pointed out that it's a problem in terms of the thermostat wars at bedtime. And sometimes some of the mood instability issues is something that's brought up as a, I need something done for this because it's causing a problem.
Yeah. So, again, we encourage everybody to take the team approach to handling these issues.
Exactly.
And so we have a caller on the line, but before we go to the caller, what are the risks and benefits of HRT, hormone replacement therapy?
So we've been mentioning some of the benefits, which the primary benefit is the treatment of the hot flashes, mood instability. It also can help with vaginal dryness, it does help to prevent osteoporosis, which is another one of the main risks that occur in menopause and will worsen over time. As far as the risks, as we mentioned from the Women's Health Initiative,
let me just intervene here. But even though it helps osteoporosis, it's not, as you mentioned on break, it's not considered an indication to use hormone replacement therapy.
Right. It's still just indicated for use for symptoms. And we recommend for treatment of osteoporosis in a woman who's asymptomatic in menopause that there are other treatments that are more effective and don't carry the same kind of risks as hormone replacement therapy.
And for vaginal dryness, you recommend a local topical application of the hormone replacement as opposed to the systemic?
Exactly. Again, for someone who doesn't have systemic symptoms, using local estrogen, there's tablets, rings, and creams that can be used locally.
Okay. And then going on to the risks.
So the risk of breast cancer, as we mentioned, which from the data of the Women's Health Initiative, of 10,000 women using the combined estrogen progesterone, 8 experienced breast cancer that was determined to be a result of that treatment, whereas in the estrogen-only arm, there was not an increased risk of breast cancer. And so there is definitely a risk there, even though for the individual it would seem small, but if you are one of those 8 who develops it, then that doesn't matter. Yeah. The other risks, which is with any estrogen-containing preparation, is blood clots. Estrogen does have a tendency to increase the risk of blood clots, that relates to strokes, clots in the legs called deep vein thrombosis, which can also produce a pulmonary embolus, a clot in the lungs, and there is an association with heart attacks in older women, especially who are taking estrogen.
With the progesterone.
Yes, that in the Women's Health Initiative, it was with the progesterone only arm.
Right. Okay, let's talk with Deborah. Deborah is a patient of Dr. Cox, and Deborah, we'd like to thank you for joining us on Valentine's Day, when we're talking about all things good about ladies, and and here we are. Are you with us?
I am here.
Okay. Well, thanks again.
Hi, Deborah.
Hi.
Tell us about your experience with menopause, perimenopause, and hormone replacement therapy.
Well, as I discussed with Dr. Cox, when I first assumed that I was going into menopause, which was around when I turned 50, which I'm 53 now. So the hot flashes just came, just, you know, not real often, but as time went on, they just became more than I could handle. I tried everything, you know, naturally and so forth. And I just noticed that my personality changed. I was more aggressive. And my husband also was suffering. So it was just a really bad time. And, you know, like I said, I didn't want to use the replacement, but it was just, you know, a necessity for me to have a normal lifestyle again.
Well, let me ask you, Deborah, you're 53 now. At 50, the hot flashes became an issue. When did you start missing cycles or having irregular periods?
Probably around that time. They kind of all just, you know, were happened about the same time. I think I had maybe one, and then maybe another one a year or so ago. But that was it. They just became very, I mean, you know, I just quit having them, basically.
And the hot flashes, they can, you know, when they started, I guess, what did you think when you had your first one? Were you kind of prepared for it?
No, but I remember the day and time and place that it was. It was something I'll never forget. I was sitting at a kitchen table at a friend's house, and I just was like, felt like someone opened an oven door, and it was not pleasant.
No,
but
did you figure out immediately what it was, or?
Oh, I knew. Okay. I mean, I knew that, you know, I was the right age, and. It didn't scare me or anything. It was just really, really uncomfortable because I just became drenched with sweat.
So it wasn't just a hot flash. What percentage of, Carol, I mean, is it known what percentage of patients with these hot flashes actually start sweating?
I don't think that it's known from the percentage perspective, but it's more common for that to be associated with the hot flashes. Yeah, you tend to hear that, especially, and the ones that occur at night, you know, they talk about the bed sheets being soaked, their pajamas, you know, having to get up and change their clothes because of that.
I haven't done that. I never have really had the nighttime stuff. It's always been during the day and like when I'm drying my hair or just, you know, cleaning house or something like that. That's when they were the worst for me.
Mm-hmm. And how frequently did you get these prior to deciding you just had to do something about it?
I was there for a while. I was like, it was almost like some days I would just be like, go into one and, you know, my job is real stressful. So I was assuming that the stress was causing them to come on. I'm not sure, but...
Are you suggesting that as soon as you came out of one flash, within a few minutes you'd go into another one that frequent?
An hour or so later,
wow.
Yes. It was just, it was horrible. Like that, I don't know, there was a commercial where these women are sitting at this table and this woman's like, I feel awful all the time. That was me. So,
and the association with stress is real. That is something that we see, that women who are having stressful circumstances with their job or at home tend to experience the symptoms more acutely.
Yes.
How long did they last for, Deborah, when you got a flash?
Probably 10, 15 minutes.
So that'll just stop you in your tracks, won't it? Whatever you're doing.
You just feel like that you just want to just strip.
Yeah, yeah. Which can be difficult at work.
Yeah.
That would be bad at work. I, you know, like wouldn't want to be fired because I stripped in my office.
This thing, obviously, when you're getting them every hour and they're lasting 10 minutes each, at some point, obviously, you said, I've got to do something about it. Once you decided that you needed to do something about it, and I'm sure that your husband was telling you that was a good idea.
Oh, absolutely. And he is a very patient man. So, you know, he was just like, he just was just as desperate as I was.
He was as desperate as you. Okay.
I'm a normally a really low key person, and it seems like to me since I've been going through this menopause, I'm a more aggressive person all around. It's changed my personality.
Wow. So you decided, we'll come back to the change in your personality. But once you decided to do something about it, what did you do? Where did you go? What did you try?
Well, I made an appointment with Dr. Cox,
okay. And
we talked about my options, and she suggested, I was, you know, my mother took, you know, the high powered, you know, she internally took medication. She had them horribly too. And I was just still afraid of all the side effects because we have heart disease in my family.
I see.
No breast issues. But, and I was just terrified almost to even start something. But she just, you know, recommended that I take this, I take a combination patch, or it's a patch, not to take it, but, and it works for me.
Well, let me go back to your mom. Is your mom still with us? She's still alive?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yes. In good health. Yes. She went through it and, but she did about the same thing I'm doing right now.
And so how old's your mom?
My mom is 74.
Okay. And, she started, I don't know if you had a conversation. She started her having hot flashes about the same time you did in her 50s.
Yes. Yes, she sure did.
And she takes the combination.
She's not no longer taking it now.
Okay.
You know, she's gotten past it and everything, but she took the, you know, the pills.
Progesterone pills.
I think it was.
Primpro, is that both life?
I think that's
the most
what
common.
It was. Yes. Yes.
And she had no side effects. I assume she had no side effects.
She didn't. She did real well with it.
Okay.
She's in very good health too. So.
Did that help you? Did that help you? Your mom's experience help you in making a decision to move forward on the hormone replacement?
She encouraged me to do it. She said, you know, I told her I was afraid, and she said, Debbie, just do it, just go with it, and if it doesn't work, then you can discontinue it. But she was the one that basically encouraged me because I you know got her advice and so forth. So she was kind of my mentor, you know, in regard to that. So.
All right, so you started, you've been on the patch for now, what, 3 years, two, 3 years, something like
no,
that?
No, let's see, Dr. Cox, I think it's
probably been just about 2 years.
I saw you back in November.
I think that's been about 2 years.
I was having some blood pressure issues, too, and that helped it considerably. That was one of the reasons that I wanted to, you know, start that because I guess it was just all the trauma going on in my body was just causing my blood pressure to, you know, be higher.
So did you say the hormone replacement therapy helped your blood pressure by relaxing you essentially?
Yes. I feel more normal. Hmm. I mean, except for just, you know, those certain times now, drying my hair and so forth. I'm very, you know, just about the, just like I was before I ever started it. So,
Do you have a family of children?
Yes, I have two.
And have you found that taking the hormone replacement therapy has helped you reduce stress in working with your kids when they act up?
Oh, well, my kids are grown and out of my house. They are older. I'm a grandmother.
how about your grandkids? I guess it's a whole different dynamic that with grandkids, so it doesn't really apply.
Yeah, 13, 12, and 8-year-old grandchildren. So.
Okay, but your husband also, excuse me, has found a difference in the way you your ability to take on stress or stressful situations.
Yes, it's just like almost like night and day. Compared to what I was going through, I was just really just basically miserable. I just didn't feel like myself.
Carol, have you found that moms with young kids that once they're put on hormone replacement therapy are able to deal with their kids better, less stress, or not? Or what is your finding on that?
Well, there's definitely a tie-in between stress and symptoms. So I think that that's where the quality of life comes into play, where when we're having that patient-doctor discussion, we're trying to determine what are those factors that are being affected. And it may be kids, it may be job. It just depends upon the individual. But stress reduction is another one of those lifestyle modification things that can help and can be an alternative when somebody really is afraid and really doesn't want to go on hormone replacement therapy. We can talk to them about stress management strategies and stress reduction as a means to also help with their menopausal symptoms. But frequently, you can't help those things like having the kids.
That's right.
Around.
So, but let me get if I can a little clarification. You say stress management symptom or stress management techniques. So like meditation or
yoga,
those things.
All of those things are very helpful.
But do you see a dynamic where perimenopause causes hot flashes cause lack of patience, throw kids in the mix, and it's a... You know, it's just chaos.
Exactly. And when you can't, you know, you can't take away the kids, so right. you really are left with no alternative but to take away the hot flashes in whatever way you can. So and it just depends on the individual how much you have to do to take those away.
But that's a frequent scenario where moms go to the hormone replacement therapy to help reduce the hot flashes, to give them more control over their personality, their ability to manage the stress from the kids or the other aspects of their life.
Yeah, more and more with women having children at older ages too, since the onset of these symptoms can start as early as age 40.
Very good. Okay, Deborah, any other any questions or comments you'd like to share with us at this point? We'd like to.
I don't think so, but
okay.
I highly encourage women, you know, that feel the same way that I do. This combination patch, you know, to me is one of the best.
Well, it sounds like you've done really exceedingly well with it, and it's really
restored
yourself.
It's absolutely just, you know, put me back where I was.
Great.
Because I'm real active. I work a full-time job, mm-hmm. and I exercise, and I'm a housewife, you know, so forth. So I don't like anything to slow me down. You know, I'm constantly doing something. So this just has absolutely just been one of the best things.
I have one question before we move on to Teresa on the phone. Dr. Cox, have you started to decrease the potency or the strength of the medication? And at what point do you consider that? And for how much longer do you think that Deborah will have to take her supplements?
Well, for Deborah, she has been she's on the lowest dose of the particular patch that she's on. It comes in two different doses, and we started on the lowest dose, which was effective for her, and so we never needed to go any higher. So at some point, we will be discussing trying to come off of the patch and see if her symptoms return. As she mentioned, her mother has done fine now for a while without hormone therapy, and we try to, because of the findings of the Women's Health Initiative, which showed that the increased breast cancer risk occurred after 4 years of use, that's kind of the point at which we want to start trying. After 4 years, we want to take a little bit of a holiday off the hormones and see what happens with the symptoms. Whether or not you do that gradually or more abruptly, it just depends upon what you're taking. For example, with this patch, it's kind of hard. You can't really wean it down.
Right. Is it a month patch, a week patch, a daily patch?
Twice a week, usually.
Twice a week.
Yeah. There are studies that show that the same number of women will have resumption of their symptoms, regardless of whether you wean them gradually or stop it abruptly. So it just depends.
All right. Well, Deborah, thanks so much for joining us today on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. And if you're looking for something very exciting to do on March 27th, it's the Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium.
Okay.
Don't forget. And you can register online at focusonfemales.com. It's a free event, and you'll find many breakthroughs for a wide variety of medical topics there.
Great. That sounds very interesting.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you.
All right.
Appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Teresa, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Thank you.
And do you have a question today for us?
Yes. At the end of December, I had a DNC, and the results were they found that I have hyperplasia with no tibia. Mm-hmm. And atypia or atypia or something like that.
With
and
no atypia?
No atypia.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And the doctor wanted to put me on, because, a little background, I have polycystic ovary syndrome, wanted to put me on progesterone, I guess because I'm producing too much estrogen or something like that. But
how old are you?
I'm 38.
Uh-huh.
And my question actually is two questions. The first question is that what if I, let's say I don't decide to take progesterone, what, you know, what are, you know, what are my chances? I guess I don't really understand this hyperplasia. I think that's the thickening of the endometrial lining.
Mm-hmm.
And as opposed to if I do decide to go on it, how long do I need to stay on it? And regarding bioidentical hormones as versus the synthetic.
So it, was it simple hyperplasia with no atypia? Was that what they said?
Right.
Okay. That is a result, that is an increased growth in the lining of the inside of the uterus. That's referring to your endometrium, which is the lining that grows as part of the cycle and is sloughed off every month.
Right.
And hyperplasia of that lining represents potentially precancerous change, which is why it needs to be treated. Most people with simple hyperplasia with no atypia will not go on to develop endometrial cancer, but that is how it starts.
Okay.
And then it progresses through stages of becoming more complex and having atypia. And it usually is a reflection of excess estrogen exposure, which is common with PCOS. And so progesterone, as I had mentioned earlier, you need progesterone around to antagonize the effects of estrogen on the lining of the uterus and prevent this kind of excessive growth that can lead to cancer. So that's what the recommendation of progesterone comes from, is meant to antagonize your natural estrogen and cause that lining to slough off adequately so that it doesn't have this excessive growth. And the way you take it can vary depending upon your physician's recommendations. They may recommend that you do it for 10 days or 2 weeks out of the month. They may recommend it in shot form.
I think he said 3 months and then do an endometrial biopsy.
Right. It's usually then you have to do surveillance endometrial biopsies to make sure that it's going away, because that the biopsy should revert to normal with the progesterone treatment in order to show that it's been successful.
Okay. And is it better for me to take bioidentical hormones as opposed to synthetic?
Well, bioidentical hormones is a tricky thing because that is not really very well defined. Actually, all of the FDA approved hormone regimens can be thought of as bioidentical because they are not really any different from the other things that are available from compounding pharmacies in that they come from the same basic ingredients. However, the ones that come, you're probably referring to what you get from a compounding pharmacy.
Right.
I would not recommend something like that because the amount of active hormone that is in those kind of preparations is not necessarily as reliable and has certainly not been tested for something like hyperplasia to determine its effectiveness in preventing cancer. So especially under these circumstances, I wouldn't recommend using something that's not one of the FDA-approved progesterones.
Okay. So basically, since I have, I guess, an excessive amount of estrogen, am I at increased risk of developing breast cancer? Am I?
Well, there's not specifically an association between PCOS and breast cancer.
We have 30 seconds.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that wouldn't change your screening. You should still, unless you had a family history or other factors that increase your risk. However, if you're overweight, which is linked with PCOS, that could be a risk.
Let me make a recommendation, Teresa, if you wish. Again, our fifth annual Focus on Females Women Healthcare Symposium is March 27th. There's a seminar on menopause. You can certainly, we welcome you, encourage you to join us. It's a free day at the Tampa Convention Center. You can sign up for the seminar at focusonfemales.com and have another opportunity to ask all your questions. And in the meantime, this is Dr. Maskin inviting or wishing each and every one of you to have a great and healthy week. Next Sunday on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, we're tackling eating disorders. Eating disorders next Sunday. Have a great week. Bye-bye.